So I appreciate your patience, anyway, with me working through that. Great to be here. Hard to imagine that the meeting is virtually over, and that's what happens with weekend meetings, but glad to be able to have been here. As I mentioned before, always great for us to be able to spend some time with Cole and Melissa. Enjoy them very, very much, love them, and great to be with them. We've been hosted very well, even though it's a very short weekend, been hosted very well by James and Jeanette and Sophie. They have been our host for this weekend, as well as kind of like the stepdog, if you will, buddy, kind of looking in from the outside, wondering why he's not a part of all the goings-on, but that's okay. We got to visit with that family, and great to be able to meet and get to know them better. I hope, as we've mentioned in the earlier lesson, that there's a good chance for the lessons that we've presented to continue to dwell in our minds and make a difference in our lives. And we don't know that for quite some time. What was the meeting like? I don't know. What have I done with that information a couple of years from now? Hopefully we have continued to grow if the Lord permits us to live a couple more years and we're able to look back on that. There was a little poem written by a lady by the name of Madeline L'Engle, and I hope you you're not overly upset or offended by this short poem that she wrote, but it expresses the idea of being very frustrated or disgusted with someone at the same time that you know that you are drawn very much to love them dearly and to be a part of them. And I would tell you that really is what marriage is sometimes. There are times when, even though we are greatly in love with one another and very dear to each other, there are times of frustration, and there are times that are harder to deal with. And this is what she wrote. She just wrote, "Dear God, I hate you. Love, Madeline." I just thought, that's an interesting statement. I'm not condoning that being said, but I'm saying, here's a person that is saying, love Madeline, but apparently she was very upset with something in her life at that moment. And so expressing it that way. Job didn't express it in that harsher language, but Job did very much, even to the point of saying, I wish God would come down here. If God would come down here and we could appear in a court of law, I'd present my case before him and he would understand that he has chosen the wrong person. He didn't deny God's right to do what he thought God was doing, even though it wasn't God doing it to him. He didn't deny God the right to do that, but he did think God had chosen the wrong person, and he wanted to be able to present his case. I am not unrighteous like God must think that I'm unrighteous, and that's why I'm going through these things. And so I would tell you, there are times that we can get very frustrated in a relationship that should be very strong and very close, and marriage is certainly that way. We're asked, as we said last time, to live in an arrangement with somebody that is very different than we are, that processes information differently than we do, that God has created in a manner that is in virtually every way, shape, or form, physically, emotionally, always, different than we are. And that's the union that God has called together in marriage. And so even though we have many things that are in common, we have many things that can be a frustration to us as well. And yet we know it's a relationship that you just can't avoid if you're married. You can't just avoid it. You can't just act like it doesn't exist. You can't walk away from it. And so how do you make it work? For a lifetime, how do you make it work? That's what this lesson is about. Because I would tell you that there is one thing that no marriage can survive without. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say there is one thing that no relationship can survive without. My relationship with my God, my relationship with my spouse, my relationship with my children, with my brethren, with my friends. For a relationship to exist, we're going to look at one facet this morning that has to absolutely be a part of that. Our relationship of marriage teaches us some things about God. In other words, I learned something about God because I am married. There are things that, in other words, if God is married to me, then I learned some things, I would say, about patience. You learn anything about patience? You understand any better how patient God is when you live in a relationship with somebody 24/7 throughout the entire year? It requires patience, does it not? It requires patience for me to be married to my spouse. Not as much as it probably requires for her to be married to me, but I would tell you, both have to exhibit patience. We understand that. I learned some things about that. I learned some things about oneness. As the two of us are becoming one, and God makes statements about Him and Christ and the Spirit being one, and Him wanting to be one with us, even when we talked about in the last lesson, the concept of intimacy, the fact that God created us male and female, and then He's not male nor female, not like we think in terms of, even though He's referred to as our Father, He's not a gender like we are in a physical sense because He's a spirit being. And yet He created us male and female, and He says, in the image of God. In other words, I can learn some things even because we are male and female and even within intimacy. And I would tell you, one of the things I learned is about the oneness of God and what it means to truly be unified with somebody else and how much difficulty God must go through in order to try to get us to truly be one with Him. I understand that because of trying to make a physical relationship work as well in this life. That's very much. But I want us to focus on one other aspect of that this morning. Marriage teaches us things about God. And I would tell you, one of the things that it teaches is it teaches us about forgiveness. Every couple that I marry, that I do the ceremony for, every couple, I ask them before I write the ceremony to give me three reasons they want to marry the person that they are choosing to marry. And you get all kinds of answers to that. Sometimes they want to answer what they think you want to hear, which is not necessarily anything in particular. I just want to know, why have you chosen this person? So I'll get answers about their spirituality, which is always good. But also get other answers like, I really love their sense of humor. I love how dedicated he is to work. I love how much she loves children and wants to be around children. I have people who say, first time I saw her, I was taken aback by her beauty, that's okay. You should feel that way about your spouse. It's not the only reason to marry her or him, but it is a part of life. We understand that. But I can tell you, I've never had anybody write me a note because I have them turn those in to me and not tell the other person. And I use those three things in the ceremony so that their spouse can hear that kind of for the first time. But I've never had anybody say, you know what, I want to marry this person because I think they will help me become better at forgiveness. And that's what we want to talk about. My best friend in the world outside of my wife, as I said, Ralph Walker, when he was engaged, and I was not yet engaged, but he was engaged to be married, and a good friend of ours who is also now a preacher, the three of us are sitting down together, actually sitting, if you're familiar at all with the old Florida College campus, the steps of a building called North Cottage. So the three of us are sitting on those concrete steps out there, and this other brother says to Ralph, he says, I'm going to pray for you and Paula in your upcoming marriage. And typical of Ralph, if you ever tell Ralph, I'm going to pray for you, you better be willing to tell him what you're going to pray because that's the next question coming. So he asked the other guy, he says, what are you going to pray? The other guy said, I'm going to pray that the two of you have sufficient troubles in your marriage to make you a stronger person. Now, I'm a new Christian when I'm hearing this. My first thought is, don't pray for me when I get married. I don't need somebody to pray that I have extra trouble. But I thought, what a great point. Once you're involved in marriage longer and you understand what a critical part that is, we get married for all these different reasons, but you're going to have to learn the concept of forgiveness. And the reason is because marriage is the union of two sinful people. And sinful people will wound each other. That is just a fact of life. When I'm dealing with couples and I'm doing premarital studies and we talk about conflict resolution, I even had a couple one time said, we're not going to argue. I know other couples argue, but we're not going to argue. You don't understand how much we love each other. We're never having any arguments. And I said, you will, trust me. You know. And they said, no, you don't understand. And they said it all again. I said, well, here's the thing. You're getting this lesson anyway. You can't exempt yourself from the lesson. I said, but do me a favor, call me when you have your first argument. They were about 2 months into their marriage, and they called one of them kind of sheepishly and said, we had an argument. I didn't think we would have, but we had an argument. I said, I told you it happened. The key is not whether you'll have them. Conflict is inevitable. It's inevitable in any relationship. Parent to child, siblings, husband to wife to husband, co-workers. I mean, conflict is inevitable because we're not exactly the same. And so if that's going to be the case, I'm going to have to learn to forgive. My marriage would be so much easier if Judy was perfect. But think how much easier hers would be if I was perfect. Neither one of us are. I like the guy one time, he said, when you're looking for a church to worship at, he said, if you ever find the perfect church, don't join it, you'll ruin it. I thought, that's good advice. That's good advice. Churches have problems. People have struggles. Christians are sinful people. We are very much people who have been saved, but we still have flaws in our lives that we're trying to overcome, and so that becomes an issue. I think what happens is, in marriage, when it happens, the thing that makes it more difficult is it somehow seems like a betrayal. Because the one person I should have least amount of conflict with should be my spouse, and yet when conflict comes up, there seems to be a sense of betrayal because this is the one that should love me the most. They should never, ever be rude, raise their voice, or make comments. You ever wonder why in families people say things to each other that they would never say in public or to their friends or to their coworkers? We feel more comfortable, and so we have a tendency, if we're not careful, to transgress more easily. And so we need to understand. And what happens is forgiveness is going to give us a word picture, like in Ephesians 5 that we talked about. A word picture that is so critical to understand, that there is a divine reconciliation and relationship that exists between me and my God. I was formed in perfection by my God, but I was deformed by sin. But now I have been transformed by the love of my Savior. And he says, that's the state, if you're a Christian, that's the state all of us go through. We start off as in those little children as perfection, but then we fall, but we come back to God. And so the picture of marriage, if it's a picture of Christ and his church, is a picture to the world of what it means to have divine reconciliation. So husbands and wives forgiving each other is one of the greatest pictures that you can give of Jesus Christ. And what should that look like? What should forgiveness look like? Luke chapter 15. You remember that story? We're not going to read that whole story. But that's a story, three different stories. A lost sheep, a lost coin, a lost son. Actually, two lost sons. There are two prodigal sons in that parable. We need to make sure we understand. One was prodigal by leaving. One was prodigal by staying home. But they were both unfaithful to their father. And the real picture in all of those parables is not the coin or the sheep or the son. The real picture is the father. And the one who was hunting for the coin and the one who was hunting for the sheep. And the rejoicing that went on when they found it. And so the father in that parable is a great picture of what forgiveness is. Because do you remember the son? I mean, I want you to envision, how hard would it have been as a Jew to hear the story that Jesus was telling? He's talking to a Jewish crowd, and he says, let me tell you about this boy that asked his father, he said, I want my inheritance now. How offensive would that be? Just to start with. I don't even want to wait. I want you to give me my inheritance now. I'm going and leaving. Well, you can imagine the crowd's already starting to stir. They're getting offended. And Jesus says he took it and he went and he spent it wantonly. He spent it in ways that were ungodly, absolutely, and wastefully, and spent all that money in sinful kinds of behavior. And as this crowd is continuing to build its anger toward this son, and then Jesus says, let me give you some more information. He took a job feeding pigs to a Jewish crowd. To me, that's no different than some other jobs that may be less than desirable. But to a Jewish audience, he took a job feeding pigs. That was an unclean animal to them. He shouldn't even have been around pigs. and he took a job feeding them. But it gets worse. Jesus eventually says he ended up sleeping where the pigs were sleeping and eating the slop that the pigs were eating. I'm saying, if you're a Jew listening to that story, can you imagine the way your heart is burning inside with anger? Kind of like David when Nathan went to him with that whole story of the ewe lamb. And it's just stirring inside, and you're thinking, something should be done. This son, he couldn't have been more awful if he had tried to be awful. What a tragedy. And then Jesus says, and he came to himself. I love that line. I love that line. He came to himself. That's where we all need to be. And he came to himself. I realized, he says, this is just not right. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to talk to my father and I'm going to say, Father, I don't have any right to be your son. I messed up big time in life, but I'm coming back. I just want to be a slave in your household. Because he had prepared this speech and he said, even my father's slaves don't have to eat with the pigs. I'll just be a slave in the household. He'd already spent his entire inheritance. And so he starts back, and his father's out there looking for him, like God is looking for all who ever need to come to him for forgiveness. Always looking to see if on the horizon we're appearing to come back. The father sees him. The father runs to meet him. The son starts his speech, and the father cuts him off mid-speech. He didn't even let the son finish his speech. He got a robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger, killed the fatted calf, had a celebration. Why? He said, because my son was dead, now he's alive. I would tell you, that's the picture of forgiveness. I say that and want to make sure we get that picture, because this is a horrific event that the father is saying, you've come back, it doesn't matter, and he hugs him. And he treats him as if he had never left. That's the picture of forgiveness. So I'm saying, think about that when we're told something like that we need to forgive as we have been forgiven. That's not talking about a frequency issue. Forgive others as you have been forgiven. It's not saying each time, though it would include that, but it's saying in the same way. In the same way you've been forgiven. I have to tell you, I have not always been quick to grant that level of forgiveness to somebody who's offended me. I don't know about you. I wish I could say every time I was like the father and I just threw my arms around him and there was no problems at all. Sometimes it's harder to deal with it than that. And so you're married. Your spouse is going to hurt you. What are you going to do with that? It may just be a word said. Maybe something done. What are you going to do with that? It may be a gift given. You ever gotten a bad gift that required forgiveness? I've got a good friend who gave his wife a box of cash at Christmas time. It's like, not thinking she's going to think that was the most thoughtful thing he could have done. And she didn't. You know, there's different things that you can do. You know, give your wife a vacuum cleaner for your anniversary. See how that goes over. There are things you can do that aren't good. I like the one lady, she says, my husband gave me a mood ring for our anniversary. She says, when I'm in a good mood, it turns green. When I'm in a bad mood, it leaves a red mark on his forehead. I'm saying, whatever the case is, and obviously some things are much more egregious than that. Things are said. Somebody could say something very harsh to you, could treat you badly, could turn a cold shoulder to you. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can do in marriage. And the thing is, we need to forgive. The problem is, forgiveness is difficult. It's difficult. And it's difficult for different reasons. Pride gets in the way. And so sometimes it is just hard to grant forgiveness to somebody. And so that's why we read Colossians chapter 3. If you want to turn back there again, Colossians chapter 3 is a great passage. Even though it's not dealing with marriage, it is dealing with two concepts that are absolutely critical in the concept of forgiveness and relationship. And so he's going to tell them two different things that they need to do. But I'm going to have to learn to forgive like God forgives, and that's a choice on my part. Remember Jesus? How unimaginable is it that they're driving nails into him when he says, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing." Wow. Wow. I mean, to say that before you get crucified, I can understand that. But as they're abusing you, and to say, "Father, forgive them." Remember Stephen doing a very similar thing? As they're throwing stones and killing him, he's asking forgiveness for those who are doing those things. That's a matter of choice if I'm going to grant forgiveness. So in Colossians chapter 3, I want us to start with verse 13, and then I'm going to go back to 12. But verse 13 says, "Bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive." Must also forgive. He says, just like Jesus did it, we're obligated to do that. We're obligated to forgive. Now, understand, I'm not dealing with that in this lesson. Forgiveness and trust are two totally different things. But forgiveness is an act of will, and God expects me to do that. But did you notice what he started with? And I tell you, this is a key in marriage as well. He said, bearing with one another. Forbearance precedes even forgiveness. In other words, when you get married, it's important to understand there are going to be some things said and some things done that are going to hurt my feelings, and I need to be aware of that. I need to be willing to bear up under some pressures. I can't be so hurt by everything that is said or done that it disrupts my whole life. Forbearance. That's just God looking at me and you and saying, I'm telling you, you get married, you're going to have to put up with some stuff. That's just what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to forgive as well, but you're going to have to put up with some stuff. That's life. He says, you can't let everything disrupt your whole life. He says, some things just require forbearance. But then he says, but if there's an actual complaint there, if there's something that's happened that needs to be dealt with, then forgiveness. But here's the key, is it not? In verse 12, he says, let me tell you how to dress as a Christian for forgiveness. You know, we're told in Galatians chapter 3, all those who have been baptized into Christ have clothed themselves with Christ. In other words, put a robe on of Christ. That's what he's saying. I've wrapped myself up with Jesus Christ. That's what I'm wearing, is Jesus Christ. That's why Paul says, I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me, and the life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. He says, look, I've died, but I've wrapped myself in Jesus Christ. That's who I am as a Christian. That's so important to understand. He's talking about that's how we're clothed. Well, Paul says, let me get you ready. You know, this morning I got up and it's like, all right, let's put the shirt on, you know, put the tie on, get dressed, put the coat on. We understand that. Get dressed to go somewhere. You know, if I was going to a football game, I'd get dressed entirely differently, but I'd still get dressed. You get up and you get dressed. You dress one way for one event and one for another. He said, let me tell you how to dress for forgiveness. Verse 12, put on then, see the clothing reference? Here's what you're to put on. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. He says, let me tell you how to dress. Start off this way. Put on compassion. Compassion is outwardly focused. Jesus is constantly referred to in this way. He looked out at the crowd, wherever they were, different situations, and it says, and he had compassion on them. It touched his heart. He looked at, and he had compassion. And it caused him to act differently than we might in some of the circumstances that he was in, because he was compassionate. And so I speak differently to somebody if I am compassionate toward them. It has a tendency to help tame that anger, that frustration. I want to show them loving compassion. We talk about doctors in this way. We talk about a doctor that has bedside manner. He's going to still have to give you the same news. Going to have to give you the same news. Judy, we thank the Lord, breast cancer survivor, 2004, chemo, radiation, all that kind of stuff that went through our life. And so your life is totally disrupted. But I got to tell you, the doctors and the nurses that worked in the oncology department where she was, they had compassion at a level that I had never seen before in the medical field. They felt for every one of their patients. They're still talking to patients and saying, you're going to have to do this, and you're going to have to do this, and we're going to try this, and we're going to see if this works. But the cancer, and they're going through all that description. But I can tell you, you felt their concern when they talked. They weren't like all the other doctors, or a lot of doctors, I should say, that I've seen. Compassion. They wanted you to feel that they felt for you. And he says that's where it starts. Forgiveness is hard, but it starts with compassionate hearts and kindness and humility. He says, I need to be kind and I need to be humble, which just means what? That just means I recognize I'm talking to a person that I'm upset with or frustrated with, that I'm granting forgiveness to, but the whole time I'm doing it, I recognize that I am every bit as much a sinner as they are. And that's the whole point of blessed are those who are poor in spirit. I got to get the right picture of myself. What would make me think that I deserve all the things that I think I deserve? See, we feel offended when we think we got something we didn't deserve. But you know what I deserve? I deserve not to even be here today. I don't mean just here. I don't deserve to be alive. My Lord has allowed me to continue to live. I don't deserve to be saved, but he allowed me to come in contact with the blood of Jesus Christ. I don't want what I deserve. I want the mercy and love and compassion that my God says he gives to me. Well, if that's what I want from him, he's just saying, you know what? I need to be willing to grant that to my spouse as well. Forgiveness is very difficult. And not only is it a matter of choice, it's a matter of perspective and viewing. You cannot live in the past. Paul said to the Philippians, one thing I do, one thing, I press on. I can't look backwards. I can tell you with couples I counsel with, so hard not to get them to constantly want to reflect back to something that has happened before. God says, you know what? Imagine that that's the way God would appear to me. I go to my God, and my God's going to say, you know what? Let me talk to you about all the stuff you've done in all these other years. Yeah, but haven't we gotten rid of that, God? Oh, yeah, we have, but I'm bringing it up anyway. Wow. God doesn't do that. It's not a matter of forgive and forget. Good luck with that. That's what I tell people. I can remember things that happened to me when I was a kid. Can you? But I don't have to hold them against anybody. I can release them, and that's what he's talking about, releasing the debt. And then I would tell you, finally, forgiveness is going to cost you. Seems like it should cost the person that's being forgiven, does it not? I mean, the person that's being forgiven should be the one that has to pay. Some part of it wants to make them pay. We just want them to, we want them to hurt a little bit more. We were in a congregation where a young man had gone forward before the congregation and confessed sin. He and his, at that time, girlfriend had been involved intimately. She was now pregnant. They were confessing that sin before the congregation. They were later engaged and married. They'd now been married for, 20-something years. Multiple children have done good for the Lord. But I can remember the week after they came forward, the young man was in the back talking to some of his friends, and they were laughing and just enjoying whatever the conversation was. I don't even know what it was. But they were back there laughing. Somebody standing beside of me said, look at that. And I look back there, and I'm thinking this person's going to say, isn't that great? They didn't. This person said, does he not even realize what he did? How can he be back there having fun and enjoying that conversation, knowing what he has done. I said, what he's done has been forgiven. Forgiven. That's God says, I released it. I need to release it. I need to forgive like God forgives. And I'm telling you, that's going to cost you, because for to do that, it's going to require you suffer some pain. You're forgiving, you may have to shed some tears. You may have to find out that it's harder to forgive than it is to receive the forgiveness. And I'll give you an example of that, and we'll be done. A man who was vying for a position at his work with another gentleman. They were both trying to get this promotion. One of the gentlemen started spreading rumors in the company about the other. Things aren't true, but saying things about him. And as it turns out, the guy who had been spreading the rumors got the promotion, and the other guy was let go. None of the things were true. The guy who had been spreading the rumors went to the boss later and told him, said, I am sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Those things were not all true. I was just so interested in getting this position. The boss said, look, what's done is done. I'm not changing what the work situation is. So he went to the guy and asked for his forgiveness, and the guy forgave him. But you know what the truth is? The guy still didn't have a job. He was still wrongly treated. The guy that had done wrong has things going well. The guy who had forgiven him was the one paying. Well, that's the point Jesus wants us to understand. For you and me to be forgiven, it cost him his life. He paid because I couldn't. And I need to appreciate that. You're going to have to forgive your spouse. Be quick about it. Be genuine about it. Be complete about it. That's the easiest way to heal a relationship. You're going to have to get forgiveness if you've never done it. If you're here this morning and you've never made your life right with Christ, you need to do that today. Give God your forgiveness. He will forgive you. Make your sins as white as snow, he says. Just absolutely say, I'm taking care of all of it. I look back at that day for me and I think, wow, because I didn't grow up in a home of Christians, and so I understand, you know what, pretty bad life that God said, you know what, Mark, I'm putting it all away. Let's just start clean and you serve me. And every time we ask for forgiveness, that's what he does. We'd ask you to make your life right with God today if that's what you want to do. If you need to be baptized into Christ so you clothe yourself with him based on your belief, based on your confession, based on your turning from your life and repentance to him, do that today. For those of us that are Christians, maybe we need to forgive our spouse. Maybe we need to forgive somebody else. Maybe we need to just go to God and ask God to forgive us. But if there's some way we can help you, let us know while we stand, while we sing.